Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall.
Welcome back. Today is the day that we are going to talk about depression, the treatment of depression.
Where the rubber meets the road.
We have been leading up to this all week. And the treatment of depression, there's at least three components.
Yeah? I was trying to think of, it's not three steps or phases,
right.
It's three components to treatment.
There's three pieces.
I give credit where credit is due.
I appreciate it. Okay. Because as we get into this a little bit, we're going to talk about the variability in treatment approaches across disciplines and, you know, in different ways. Because it's...
You're going there?
Well, it's just a little... It's challenging. Because what we're going to talk about here is best practice. Is that fair to say? What seems to be best practice based upon the research and what the research literature suggests.
Right. That's right.
But best practice isn't necessarily what's routinely done.
True.
And so we're going to address that difference a little bit, because if you're struggling with depression and you go to see your physician may or may not follow some of the things that we're going to talk about today.
Right.
Part of that may be because your physician just doesn't know. I mean, a lot of primary care physicians don't receive a lot of training when it comes to the treatment of depression and other mental health issues.
Or they deal with it at an experiential level, where they've seen other patients, this has worked well, so they continue doing it.
Right.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Right.
You know, if it's working well and you've had success, then by all means, continue doing the same thing.
Absolutely. Right. So,
no criticism here.
No, none at all. But, so that may be one reason, and another reason could be that, you know, some physicians, just like some psychologists and some counselors, they feel as though their treatment approach is the best approach.
Right.
And so they, instead of following some of these best practices, they're going to follow their approach. And maybe for reasons that you said, that, you know, it's just what has been effective for them in the past. And so they're going to try that.
You ran into that one time in psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
Where you had that, it was a professional argument, there was nothing personal about it,
right.
But there was a disagreement about how to approach a particular disorder, and one of you was saying, well, this is best practice, this seems to be the most effective treatment, and the other professional was saying, no, this is the best thing to do, and both of them couldn't work.
Right.
I mean, only one of them could work.
Right.
And so you didn't know which one. But it was a legitimate professional argument that you got into.
Right.
But best practice was what you were saying.
Right.
I mean, the research was on your side of that argument.
Right.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about the treatment of depression from that best practices type of...
Right. Of approach. Right.
Right. Because it's just important to know what those best practices are so that you can... Because a lot of the things that we're going to talk about are things that you can start doing right now before you even see a professional.
Right. As a consumer, this is what you should expect. I mean, this is what best practices say should be happening.
Right.
If not, you may want to ask additional questions.
Right.
Right.
All right. So when we're talking about the treatment of depression, as we said, there's three components. Mm-hmm. The first is, and it's, I love it that we're starting with this one, and we are following a website that helpguide.org. The link is in the show notes, but it is very consistent with what we do here in our practice. But the first component is lifestyle change.
That's right.
You know, we've talked many times on this podcast about the importance of four things. Well, it used to be three.
Used to be three, right. That stool, right?
That's right. So exercise,
right.
Diet, sleep, and stress management.
Right.
Okay. Those four pieces are critical, and they're all just lifestyle choices, lifestyle decisions. Getting out and walking, moderate speed, you know, three or four times a week. Getting an adequate amount of sleep, going to sleep at a decent time, and you know, waking up at a decent time.
You know, I'm surprised. I read an article this morning about exercise, how little exercise it takes
right.
to get things moving in the right direction again. I mean, we're Absolutely. Only talking about hours per week.
Absolutely.
Not hours per day, hours per week.
Mm-hmm. You know? Right. And one of the things that we emphasized in a previous podcast is that, you know, your depression is going to make you want to remain sedentary.
Right.
The best treatment for that is to not be sedentary, is to get up and move, get out and do something.
Counterintuitive, right. but absolutely correct.
It's absolutely against what your body's telling you it wants to do.
That's right.
But that's exactly what you need to do. Mm-hmm. You need to get up and move. So exercise, you know, you need to be eating well.
Eat properly.
For some of the same reasons, your body is going to be telling you to eat junk food, carbs, and
you're going to crave carbohydrates,
lots of carbs and sugars and things right. like that. So the important thing to do then is not indulge in those things.
Sorry to interrupt you.
That's right.
I read recently that a craving, which we all have,
mm-hmm.
only lasts 3 minutes.
Interesting.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
Okay. But I was looking at this diet stuff, and it said, don't worry about your cravings. They're only going to last, at most, they'll only last for 3 minutes.
Mm.
I had never thought about that before, but normally we satisfy the craving
right.
before 3 minutes are up.
Yeah.
But if you can outlast it, you only have to wait 3 minutes.
Right.
Okay. Which seems like a long time.
Right.
But get a timer. You know,
right.
and next time you have a craving, and I did it for a couple of days, it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Because I get this craving for dessert,
mm-hmm.
you know, after I've had, I'll eat a yeah. decent meal, all the right foods.
Right.
And I think, man, and the dessert starts calling my name. Mm-hmm. I can hear it through the refrigerator.
It's amazing.
It calls my name. But if you wait 3 minutes, and it actually is less than 3 minutes, if you wait about a minute and a half or 2 minutes, it goes away.
And that, of course, is different than, you know, when you are working during the day and you're like, you know what, I'd really like to have pizza tonight.
Yes.
And then like throughout the day you're thinking, I'd like to have pizza tonight.
Right.
You know, that's a different kind of craving than what we're talking about
right.
here. This
right.
is that immediate indulgent type of, I need some sugar right now.
I need
now.
It right now.
Yeah.
Right? And it's usually sugar,
mm-hmm.
okay, is what your body is craving. It's really genetically not craving that, but that's
right.
what it feels like, right?
Right.
So, but when you get a little depressed, you are going to crave simple sugars.
Right.
Because you want to energize yourself. Okay.
Right.
And we know, our bodies know that sugar is a quick energy source. Not a good energy source, but it's a quick energy source.
That, and what a significant spike in your blood sugar mm-hmm. levels do is it releases serotonin.
And it releases serotonin.
Which is, of course, the treatment for, you know, if we're thinking about, we're going to skip down to the third component of medication. That's the purpose of, you know, that's the goal of most medications, is to increase serotonin. So your body sort of knows that, and so it craves those things, because when you indulge in a lot of simple sugars, then you're going to have a good surge of serotonin.
But I took us off topic a little bit there. But so the first one is movement.
Right.
Okay, you got to move.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is watch your cravings.
Right.
You know, eat a healthy diet and watch your cravings.
Right.
Somebody said one time, you know, nobody eats 6 apples, but a lot of people can eat 6 donuts.
Right.
You know, so, but yeah. watch your cravings.
Yeah.
Okay. And the third?
Sleep.
Is sleep.
You need to make sure that you're getting adequate, appropriate amounts of sleep.
Right.
And that means not too much and not too little.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
if you're in bed 12 to 15 to 8, if you don't want to get out of bed.
Right.
Could be a problem.
It goes back to the movement thing. You got to
right.
get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
So making sure that you're keeping your sleep schedule as routine as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means getting up and setting alarm, even if you still feel tired and fatigued and those mm-hmm. kinds of things, again, you got to get up and get moving.
Right.
And then that fourth piece is stress management. So
mm-hmm.
you have to, those first three are going to help with your stress management,
mm-hmm.
but also things like meditation and relaxation and some of those kinds of things will help with your depressive symptoms as well.
And we call those more active approaches to stress management.
Right.
The passive approaches are if you change how you eat,
mm-hmm.
if you eat well, if you sleep well, or you exercise, you'll have less stress, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But also you can do Things like meditation and right. yoga and other things that you can actively do. And we don't do enough of that here.
Right.
You know, we're embarrassed to take a nap at work.
Right.
There's still something attached to that.
You know?
Take a 10-minute nap, you know.
Because somebody might come by and take a picture of you.
That's what I mean about embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be embarrassed. I mean, you know, many people today are working 12 and 14 and 15 hours a day.
Right.
You have to have some downtime. You can have mm-hmm. downtime either by going on the internet,
right.
you know, and fooling around on the internet, looking at National mm-hmm. Geographic or whatever, you know, YouTube videos, take a little bit of a break. Or you can just close your eyes for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Whatever it takes for you to restore, to recharge.
Right.
I think Stephen Covey calls it sharpen your saw.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
do those little things that make you feel a little bit better.
Absolutely.
Okay? Don't be embarrassed about it.
Yeah. So those four pieces comprise the first component of depression treatment. Yeah?
Yes.
All right.
I'm thinking about something.
The next component of depression treatment is psychotherapy. Now, I think it's important to note here that the first one is lifestyle, because that's stuff you can do right now. You don't need any other help with that. You know, you can do some of these things on your own.
You mean the first component?
The first component
is lifestyle, right?
The second component is psychotherapy. Okay,
right.
So now we haven't talked about medication yet.
No.
And there's going to be an important reason that we're going to talk about, and we'll get to that in just a few minutes. But the next one is psychotherapy again, as is the case with many conditions that we think about in mental health, one of the main approaches is cognitive behavioral therapy. Now there's approaches to take from the behavioral perspective, there's approaches to take from the psychoanalytic perspective and all of that, but probably the most accepted form of psychotherapy for depression mm-hmm. is cognitive behavioral therapy.
Right.
The goal is to change the way that you behave and the way that you think about things.
Right. If you're a consumer,
right.
if you're looking for some treatment,
mm-hmm.
you need to know that all of us in this field are trained by other professionals,
right.
and we're trained according to certain theoretical perspectives. Some universities you go to will train you in behavioral techniques.
Mm-hmm.
Some will train you in cognitive techniques. Some will train you in psychoanalysis.
Right.
Okay. So each of us brings a theoretical
mm-hmm.
perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You and I we consider ourselves eclectic, but we're really trained in a neuroscience
right.
background,
mm-hmm.
medical/neuroscience background. So that's the perspective that we bring.
Right.
So please know that if you're a consumer, you're going to be working with somebody who has a particular perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That perspective may or may not match what you want or
right.
what you need. Perfectly okay. Again,
right.
It's not about incompetence, it's about our training and background. So when we get to the psychotherapy part, we all are going to bring a certain
mm-hmm.
theoretical perspective to
right.
this second component.
Right.
Okay. So you mentioned behavioral.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can just change some behavior,
mm-hmm.
or you can change your thinking
right.
with a cognitive behavioral approach. But there are others. There are a number of other techniques that we can use.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When it comes to the cognitive behavioral and many of the iterations underneath the umbrella
mm-hmm.
of cognitive behavioral therapy,
right.
you know, the goal is to attack the troublesome thoughts.
Right.
You know, we've talked earlier this week about the idea of catastrophizing, and we talked about the idea of mm-hmm. you know, those broad generalizations. So you don't do something, you fail a test, and so all of a sudden it's like I'm a failure. I
mm-hmm.
always fail. I'll never pass this class. You know, that starting to generalize and globalize these shortcomings to the point where now you're just seeing yourself as, you know, nothing, you know, a loser or a
right.
failure in every aspect of your life. And so in cognitive behavioral therapy, what we will focus on, or what we'll work to do, is identify those what we'll call cognitive distortions.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's distorting reality to fit whatever particular circumstances happening at the time. And we'll work to address those cognitive distortions by looking at reality.
Right.
Well, you know, you failed this test, but you made 100 on the last test. So clearly, you know,
mm-hmm.
you're not a failure. Clearly, you know, we need to figure out what went wrong with this one and we can fix it for the next one.
And this is one of the places where assessment is so critical, okay, to make an accurate assessment, because if you have a person who comes in and has sort of an overwhelming sadness,
right.
I mean a debilitating, overwhelming sadness, it's not one specific thing that they're struggling with, okay? It's
right.
sort of a, they don't even know where to begin,
right.
okay? It's very difficult to say, well, just do this, you know, because you're not addressing a single problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's an overwhelming feeling that, you know, for the person who just can't get out of bed, people who are just stuck. So, but one of the things we do as professionals, I'm not talking you and I, I'm talking about all mental health professionals do, is they try to determine if this is a specific problem that you're having in one area
right.
or whether it's more global.
Right.
Okay. And if it's more global, then you may want to go to the third component.
Yeah.
But begin with this because this would be the easiest fix for everybody.
Right.
This would be the easiest way to approach it, is to take this second. The first component should always be done.
Lifestyle.
Those four lifestyle changes. But the second is this one.
Right.
You know, do this one first. Try everything here first.
Right. And what the research suggests is that for most people with depression, addressing lifestyle and psychotherapy, psychotherapeutic approaches, works for most people.
It's going to be sufficient.
Right.
And the person who really told us this was William Glasser.
Right.
I mean, William Glasser was a psychiatrist. He passed about 4 years ago. A psychiatrist who could prescribe as a medical professional and took pride in announcing that he never used medication.
Right.
I do not use medication in my practice. Okay. And his was all about lifestyle changes. If you change the way you think about things, and if you change your lifestyle, you know, make the changes you need to make in order to get yourself out of where you are.
Right.
Okay. And the best example of this is, it's not what happens to you, it's how you react to what happens
Absolutely.
To you.
Absolutely.
Okay. Change that. It's not, everybody has problems.
Right.
Everybody has challenges. Everybody has ups and downs. But it's how you interpret these things. And if you tend to interpret them in a negative way, you're gonna get stuck.
Absolutely.
Okay? And he said, you just need to change the way you think about things, right? And so there's much work that you can do in the second component before rushing into medication.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that will bring us to our third component of medication, we'll just refer to it as the medical approach, because in severe depression, non-responsive depression,
right.
we've talked before about things like ECT, electroconvulsive therapy.
Right.
Don't look that up on YouTube, because there are some, those are very old videos that would, you know, scare you. But it's not like that anymore. ECT, electroconvulsive therapy, is very effective for some people. It's certainly not a first or second or third or fourth line of treatment. It is sort of a treatment of last resort for people who have depression that's not responding to anything else. But you know, that would fall within the broad class of medical treatments, as would transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS. That's another sort of brain stimulation type of treatment that can be done on an outpatient basis.
Right.
ECT is done at the hospital. TMS can be done in a psychiatrist's office.
And far less invasive.
Right.
Okay. With pretty good results. But it's still an experimental.
Right.
Considered an experimental
and
treatment.
It's still for more severe cases.
Right. But it's not a first line.
Right.
Treatment. Right.
Now, when it comes to medication, we have this broad class of medications called antidepressant medications. And within that broad class, there are several subclasses.
You know,
some of the first ones to came out in the 1950s, and they were called tricyclic antidepressants. And they were pretty good at increasing serotonin. That was the main goal. But they were, if you read some of the early... some of the papers written about it, they were just considered dirty. So they weren't real specific to the central nervous system.
Right.
And so you would get lots of peripheral side effects. And
that
so
was the big problem with them.
Right. And so they were used for a long time, but for a few decades.
Well into the 80s. Yeah.
Right. But they, but you know, that we started to get better medications, mm-hmm. and as we started getting better medications, the tricyclics were used less and less often.
Right.
And now there's just a few that are used, but they're mostly used really for their side effects than they are for anything else. Some are used because one of the side effects is sleepy. Right. It makes you very, very tired. Another one is used because it's it sort of dries you up.
It dehydrates you.
So right. if you have a child who has problems wetting the bed,
right.
they may be given this medication that mm-hmm. falls within this category because it...
In the old days, you knew that somebody was... we knew that somebody was on an antidepressant because they would have dry mouth.
Right.
Okay, they referred to it as dry mouth. And so it was pretty clear that they were taking in one mm-hmm. of these tricyclic antidepressants.
Yeah. You know? And imipramine is one of the right. most common.
But we also gave it to kids who would wet the bed.
Right.
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 Dry them out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. A second class that is actually really effective, but we just don't use it very often, mm-hmm. are the MAOIs, monoamine oxidase inhibitors. Monoamine oxidase is a substance in our brain that sort of cleans everything up. Our nervous system isn't very precise, and so we will sometimes release a lot of neurotransmitters that don't find receptor sites, and so they just kind of float around in your brain. And monoamine oxidase goes in and just kind of gobbles all those up and cleans things up.
Think Pac-Man here.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
It's like little Pac-Man running around. Whenever you hear ASE
mm-hmm.
enzyme, you know it's an enzyme, and what it does is it cleans up mm-hmm. the debris.
Right. Okay?
So they travel around like Pac-Man or Ms. Pac-Man,
right?
And eat up this excess.
Right.
They're like little, what are those robotic vacuum cleaners?
Roombas.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like these are your brain's Roombas.
Roombas. Mm-hmm. So monoamine oxidase inhibitors inhibit that. And so it allows those neurotransmitters to remain in the brain for longer, hoping that they will float around and find receptor sites that they can fit into.
And I love these names. It's a monoamine oxidase inhibitor.
Mm-hmm.
So it inhibits the enzyme that cleans it up, which
right.
means you're leaving it in the system longer
right.
to do its work.
So it's an inhibitor that increases.
Right.
The
it inhibits this to increase that.
Right. Right. Now, the challenge with MAOIs, and they are notably much more commonly used in other countries.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They're not as commonly used here because to be on those, you have to change your diet. You have to
be careful of what you eat.
Especially mm-hmm. Things higher in tyrosine.
Right.
It's not very good to do that because you could go into, mm-hmm. well, you could have some pretty serious medical side effects
right.
if you're consuming too much tyrosine while on MAOI. And so we don't really like when we have to change our diet all that much, and so we don't use it that much, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and there's some other very common aged mm-hmm. meats and aged cheeses and things like that.
Yeah, you can't eat all the things you like, you
mm-hmm.
know, sausages and aged this and aged that, and mm-hmm. chocolate is on that list, and sausages mm-hmm. and nitrates yeah. and all that good stuff that
yeah.
you shouldn't eat anyway.
That's right, yeah. But
you do have to be careful. The problem with MAOs is that is the dietary.
Right.
Restrictions
right.
that they do, because you can get into some trouble
right.
with these.
And as we're on this topic very quickly, sometimes MAOIs are used by other professionals as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're used by cardiologists
right.
and other internal medicine doctors for other conditions. And so you really have to be mindful, because MAOIs are contraindicated. With almost every other psychiatric medication,
right.
Any other psychotropic medication.
Right.
So if you're on an antidepressant, say an SSRI or a tricyclic, or if you're on ADHD medication or any of those others, you should not be also taking an MAOI. You can't take those at the same time, because
right.
you know, it's going to really increase those neurotransmitters a lot, and mm-hmm. then it's going to create some problems.
That's right. You're leaving too much.
Right.
You know, you're taking one medication to increase it, and you're taking another one so that it increases even more. So
mm-hmm.
you're going to get an exaggerated effect,
right.
exaggerated
right.
response.
Right.
So be careful.
Now, some of the newest medications are the SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. There are some now that are being even more refined to be SNRIs, so serotonin, norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors. So they work on both serotonin and norepinephrine, which is really where some of the research is going. We kind of got into this serotonin kick accidentally back in the 1950s, and research now is really looking into some of the implications of the other neurotransmitters, especially norepinephrine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Prozac was one of the first, and, you know, so we had this huge reaction, response to the benefits of Prozac, and then we just got medication after medication after medication with Paxil and Zoloft and all these others that came thereafter. And then some of the newer ones, Effexor, and also they are, what they do is, when we were just talking about how the brain isn't, the nervous system isn't really precise as it relates to it releases exactly the amount of neurotransmitters that go into exactly the right number of receptor sites. What will happen is the neuron will release the neurotransmitters until the concentration in the area is so great that some of those neurotransmitters are coming back to the neuron that's sending it out, and there's receptor sites there. Those are called reuptake receptor sites. And when some of those chemicals get into those receptor sites, it says, oh, you're releasing too much because now you're getting feedback. And so it will turn it off. It'll stop releasing the neurotransmitters then. So by blocking those reuptake sites, it allows the cell to continue to release serotonin or norepinephrine.
Keeps it flowing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's your basic...
basic neurochemistry for the day.
Yeah, there we go. But that's how the SSRIs increase serotonin, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. It inhibits the reuptake, allowing the or requiring the cell to continue to release neurotransmitters.
Right.
So, and there's not just, there's others besides serotonin and norepinephrine medications that do that. There's other medications that do it for other neurotransmitters as well. So, but in that way, these medications, all three of these medications work to keep the levels of serotonin and or norepinephrine in the brain flowing as for as long as possible, hoping that, you know, with the idea that the more there is, the more receiver receptor sites that are going to receive them.
Right.
Now the conflict. There's two big issues with, or at least two big issues with medication. The first is it takes a while for the medications to become effective.
Right.
So if you start a medication today, it will take in the very least 2 to 3 weeks before you start seeing any effects. Many times 4 to 6 weeks before you start seeing any effects.
That's right.
And that is, you know, and the challenge of course with that is that you're gonna start at a starting dose. And if you need more than that, you may see very minimal benefits at all. And so what a lot of times what physicians will do is they'll put you on the starting dose, and then 3 to 4 weeks later you'll go back in for another visit, make sure there's not any serious side effects, and then they'll go ahead and increase it at that point, and then you'll wait about another 4 weeks or so to see if you're going to gain any relief.
And if you're doing the math, now you're up to 2 to 3 months.
Right.
Okay. If everything goes well, you're at least a month.
Right.
Before you're going to know whether the medication is effective or not.
Right. Okay.
So if you're going to use medication, be patient because you're not going to know. And you may not know for, some people don't know for 2 or 3 months.
Right. And you have to take it every day.
And you have to keep taking it.
Just because it's not working doesn't mean you should stop it. You have to keep taking it.
That's right.
And sometimes you're going to have some side effects. Sometimes it may cause an upset stomach or something like that. It may make you tired. Talk with your physician to adjust it. If the physician initially told you to take it in the morning, but it's making you really tired, he or she will likely tell you to switch and take it in the evening. But you know, you're going to make some of those adjustments. Your GI system typically
It's going to rebel.
Right.
You know, you're putting some strange substance into your body.
Right.
And you're going to have headaches. You're going to have stomach aches. You're going to be tired. You're
going to
be, so you need to be aware that, you know, every medication, even aspirin, has side effects.
Right.
Okay. So you're probably going to suffer some side effects, but you have to sort of muscle through these weeks until you get the right medication in the right amount. But please be patient.
Right. Yeah. Because, and your body will adjust to it. It just takes a little bit of time.
Right. Adjust eventually.
Right.
with marvelous capacity to mm-hmm. tolerate things.
Now, the 2 to 3 months that it takes for the medication to really get going mm-hmm. is about the amount of time that it takes to see to know if you're going to have any benefits from psychotherapy
other changes.
Or the lifestyle right. changes. So mm-hmm. this is why when you're thinking about the three components of treatment, lifestyle and psychotherapy should come first. Because right. if you do that for a couple of months, by the time the medication would even kick in, you're probably going, the vast majority of people will already be seeing improvement. Yeah?
Yes. And I always begin by considering lifestyle changes. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, you will see a patient. Now, I'm not sure that we even see as many as are out there. Mm-hmm. I think that a person who has a true chemical mm-hmm. imbalance, those are usually caught fairly mm-hmm. early by
right.
somebody else.
Right.
Okay. I think most often, by the time people get to us, it really is a lifestyle change mm-hmm. that probably is needed. That
right.
I hesitated even before saying this, but typically I find that it's usually a lifestyle change mm-hmm. that will make the difference. Now, it may be necessary to use a combination,
mm-hmm.
okay, that you made all the lifestyle, or you can't change your lifestyle. If you
right.
have 4 or 5 children, there's only so much you can do. If you're
right.
not gonna, and you've decided, I'm not going to leave my children,
right?
Then there are so many changes that are possible
right.
to make. You
yeah,
know?
Absolutely.
Or if you're married and you decide, I'm going to stay married,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to, there are only so many changes you can make.
Right.
Okay. So you are, there are some constraints
mm-hmm.
about making lifestyle changes. But I think in the overwhelming number of cases, the first component, the lifestyle changes,
mm-hmm.
and that's what Glasser argued,
mm-hmm.
and others will argue that if you change these things about your life, you're going to get rid of these symptoms that you're
right.
having. Okay. But we all know plenty of people who are in jobs
mm-hmm.
that they have to take medication
right.
just to tolerate their work schedule or to tolerate the job that they're in.
Right.
What Glasser and others would say, change jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
You're obviously doing something that your body doesn't want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the body knows.
Right.
So I'm not sure that I would take medication just so I could stay in a relationship. Or
right.
stay in a job. You know, I think
no,
I'd
absolutely.
Consider changing the relationship with the job.
Right.
But not everybody makes that decision.
Right, absolutely. And you know, again, when it comes to the medication, many times people will go to medication because they want what they feel will be a quick fix.
Yeah,
they want and
that's
it's,
true.
Again, it's just important to know that it's not a quick fix. It takes time.
Now, you said earlier, a few minutes ago, you said there are two, what do you call them, challenges,
yeah.
truths, untruths, myths?
Two issues, yeah.
Yeah, and one was the time that it takes.
Right.
And the other?
The other is that there's some research coming out, very interesting research coming out now, to suggest that many of these medications, antidepressant medications, aren't quite as effective as
good. Okay.
Some of the research suggests, some of the researchers were initially trying to say that they were.
I was hoping that was the second one.
Yeah.
Okay, because you're right. As we do more, remember when Prozac first came out?
Mm-hmm.
Were you?
Yeah.
You were probably a teenager.
Yeah.
When Prozac first came out, people thought, this is a miracle drug.
Yeah.
Everybody should be taking
mm-hmm.
Prozac. Well, they said that about Dilantin.
Right.
You know, when Dilantin first came out, they say everybody should be taking Dilantin. Everybody shouldn't be taking Dilantin. But it seemed like a miracle drug, like it was going to fix everything. And
right.
we started to dispense Prozac for all sorts of things. And then we discovered that, slow down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe everybody shouldn't be taking
right.
it. Because the medications are not as effective. Let me put it this way. There are some people for whom medication is a miraculous,
yeah.
I'll say cure.
Right.
Okay? It's a miraculous difference. I mean, mm-hmm. people will come in and say, I can function now.
Right.
Okay. But that's, could we say a minority?
That's not the typical.
That's mm-hmm. not a typical response.
Right.
Most people, they'll tolerate the side effects because they feel a little bit better.
Right.
Okay. Which means that not all depression is caused by serotonin
right.
insufficiency.
Right.
Okay. There are other reasons why you're
mm-hmm.
depressed.
Right.
And serotonin insufficiency is only one.
Right.
Right. And so you have to consider all these other causes. Mm-hmm. We talked about causes and risk factors earlier this week. Mm-hmm. There are many causes associated with these symptoms. Okay? Mm-hmm. And there are multiple symptoms. And the medication is a miraculous intervention for some, mm-hmm. but not all.
Right.
So be careful.
Right.
It's going to take a long time. Mm-hmm. And even after 3 or 4 months, you might throw up your hands and say, I've tried everything. I've mm-hmm. given it enough time. It's not working for me. I have to do something else.
Absolutely. So it is important to note those things. And so that's, again, all the more reason that we should be focusing on those first two components, the lifestyle and the psychotherapy, because that's going to give you the skills to sustain.
That's right.
That's going to bring your body back in balance mm-hmm. Through the lifestyle choices. And then psychotherapy is going to help get your sort of your cognitive perspectives back in focus.
Because chances are, even if the medications are 100% effective, mm-hmm. you're still going to have to do these other things. Right. And I typically say to patients, you're going to be doing these things anyway.
Right.
We all have to. I mean, you can't take a medication and expect it to make your marriage better.
Right.
Okay. There are other skills you need to learn to make your marriage better, or to become a better parent, or to tolerate graduate school, or to tolerate a job. And so you're going to have to do these anyway. So start with those, because if you make those changes, it may be sufficient.
And that's why the components are ordered in the way that they
exactly.
are.
Exactly.
The lifestyle things, that just needs to be always.
You're going to do that anyway.
Always, all the time, mm-hmm. from now on.
Right. All of us can improve those.
Right. The psychotherapy, that's going to teach you skills, hopefully, mm-hmm. that you're going to then use from now on.
Right.
Medication is third when those other things aren't very effective, aren't effective in managing things.
Right.
Medication is third because clearly there's something else going on that needs to be addressed, right. and mm-hmm. we can go the medical route from there.
Right.
Yeah. So.
No, I like that approach.
All right. Well, that's it then for today.
It's nice seeing you again.
It's good to see you.
What day is it?
I don't know.
Come on.
Well, we're recording it today. On Tuesday.
I know, but Saturday.
Saturday.
Right.
Yeah.
Weekend.
So. All right.
Enjoy your weekend.
Yes, everyone, enjoy your weekend. We'd love to hear from you if you have any thoughts about depression. If you have a condition perspective that you would like for us to talk mm-hmm. about, let us know. Write to us. We still get lots of comments on YouTube. Love it. I try to respond to everyone. Mm-hmm. And we certainly take into some of the advice or recommendations, so that'll be great. Reviews on and ratings on iTunes, as always.
Right.
Very appreciated. It helps other people find us, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. So, and we're still working on some of the audio stuff. I know earlier this week, and maybe even with this one, the audio isn't quite where it needs to be, but we have a few things coming that will hopefully help with that.
We have some coming today, right?
It should be today here tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll be here tomorrow. Oh. So hopefully we'll have that all set. We had to record today because you're going to be out of town. So
I am.
So, all right. That is it then. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.
Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.